From theunts.com, this is the Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com. Hello and welcome to the Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. Once again, it's been a long break, but we're back with the good stuff. Oscar Davy Wright, better known as Opio, is one of the preeminent provocateurs of the glitch hop genre. Originally hailing from New Zealand, the producer and DJ now calls Melbourne, Australia home. For more than a decade, Opio has been crafting these alien landscapes full of glitch, swing, and plenty of bass. I got to speak with Opio as he was coming off his big nationwide tour with Big Gigantic. And now the big news this week is the release of a huge remix for Pretty Lights. We'll hear his take on Done Wrong from A Color Map of the Sun, the remixes. And later in the program, you'll hear a world premiere of his brand new remix of Monarch from New Zealand's Shapeshifter. Opio is set to embark on a big New Zealand tour this December. All dates can be found at opio.com, that's O-P-I-U-O.com, and then he hits Rainbow Serpent in Australia in early 2014. We've also got some big news regarding his studio work, but we'll let you listen to the interview to find out about that. Your run with Big Gigantic just wrapped up. Tell me about that. How was the big tour?
Yeah, it was great. I played a bunch of cities I've never been to. I met those guys. We hung out. We all got along amazingly. We even ended up jamming the last couple of shows. They jumped up during my set, which was an awesome surprise for everyone and just so much fun to play live music, you know, because my sets, the way I play them, are pretty live, so I can move around and have instruments in there. And yeah, dude, it was I don't know, for the people out that side of the country who've never seen me but know of me, finally have somewhere to go.
Certainly. How does a collaboration like that take place? You guys are just dicking around at the back of the bus and they're like, all right, we're going to hop up on this tune and we're going to do this and this, or is it more like they surprised you?
No, we were just like, we both into what each other were doing, so we're just like, fuck, how can we do it? The second to last show, Jeremy jumped on the drums for a couple of tracks. We literally just went through them at soundcheck once. And then he jumped up and then did it. And now, because he's such a good drummer, it was fine, you know. And
sure.
And then the next day, we did the same thing, went through it once with Dom with the sax as well. And he's such a good player too that it just, you know, they can go around. And I just had to cue them when, you know, breakdowns were happening and shit like that. But yeah, it was awesome.
And you've played in the live band setting before. You've done the Opio live band like at Sonic Bloom. So this is something that you've been considering and thought of and have kind of worked out a system of how that works.
Yeah, I mean, the Sonic Bloom thing was just a live version of me. My live band is like seven people on stage. It's a full,
sure,
full actual live show. So I've never done that outside of Australia because it's such an undertaking and a mission and an expensive thing. And I just have to figure out how I can do that to tour the world. But at some point, I'm going to take it around the world for sure, because it's kind of the evolution of everything for me as well, you know. I still want to do all of it. But yeah, like the Sonic Bloom thing, just having another instrumentalist there, we can bounce off each other and I can loop them and you know, really delve into songs. And doing it with Big Gigantic was cool too, because it just added that extra element of, I don't know, yeah, just live show vibes.
Is that your background? Is this hearkening back to where you started in music? Did you come up playing in bands?
Yep. Yeah, I used to play drums since I was, I would have been like, when I first jumped on a drum kit, I was two, apparently, according to my mum. Because they used to have a place where they had bands and stuff playing and parties and that, and used to hang out with them when I was, you know, obviously a kid, I was just around, and yeah, first jumped up when I was 2 years old and did that thing, but I didn't start playing drums till I was probably 12 or so, and I did that all the way through school and until maybe I was 18. Also left home, didn't really play music that much, but sort of continued DJing. And I kind of it's something about music for me that needs the element of real music, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a shitload of electronic music that has no, you know, direct connection to real music, but it might have a progression or a styling that kind of makes me feel like it does. And whether it's a subconscious thing, it's, yeah, I just love that element of, you know, music. But also, I guess, yeah, it, I think my love for doing the live thing is to more to put on a show, you know, and that's kind of I can imagine people being in the crowd just really wanting to watch and stand there and listen and see things happen live, you know, and it's almost like a this will never happen again exactly the way it is. It's a bonus. I fucking love that shit.
Swing Break, a remix of the McMash Clan, out now on Circus Records. Let's slide into Done Wrong, the Pretty Lights remix, which dropped this week on A Color Map of the Sun, the remixes. So tell me, you're growing up in New Zealand, you're starting to play in bands. Are these punk bands, metal bands? What are you playing? What are you listening to?
Yeah, they were like, I mean, we were playing everything from, you know, our own original stuff was probably at least 60% of the set. Then we're covering like the Pixies and I can't remember, cool. You know, Nirvana and random shit like that. So it was kind of like a, you know, grungy, rocky kind of thing. We had a few ska tracks that we'd written and it was just fun. I mean, it's quite funny because we were well underage, but we were playing all these pubs and venues with these bands that, were kind of like, you know, much older than us, and we definitely weren't allowed to legally drink, but we were definitely in these venues, and it was pretty fucking loose. So, yeah, sure. It's pretty funny. I mean, it was almost like another era of my life, you know, it's just the musical side of things. And now it's only recently in the last couple of years, even after producing music for a while, that I've gone back to wanting to play much more live things. And when I perform, even just by myself, I have a drum machine and a bunch of other things that I bring back my sort of, you know, drumming world.
Certainly, certainly. Tell me about the scene there in New Zealand. Folks in the States might not be familiar with what's popular and you know some of the acts who have come out of there. So uh-huh. So if you can give me a quick breakdown for us ill-informed.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually live in Melbourne in Australia. So mm-hmm. my knowledge of the New Zealand scene is limited in the sense that I only go there a few times a year to play.
Sure.
But, I mean, growing up there and in terms of what I'd you know, the scene of a general country, the whole entire country kind of vibe and things, you know, it's a island nation and heavy sort of, you know, island lifestyle, history and culture, you know, leads to like good dub and reggae and, you know, heavy sort of deep kind of music, I guess, in that sense of like, you know, big fat bass lines and cool reggae and, you know, most of the Maori population can sing amazingly and all that sort of shit. So, that yeah. kind of world for me, you know, evolved into, you know, that was the sort of parties I was going to when I was younger and festivals and there used to be a big electronic scene when I was sort of around 14, 15, even younger. that I was going to because my parents used to have them on their land, and then it moved and got really big, and was, I was seeing lots of international trance acts and all sort of shit, well before kind of electronic music was really seen as, like, you know, a very popular kind of more mainstream type of music, you know. So, I mean, it was in that, like, the 98, 99, 2000 kind of era when I was really discovering electronic music and big sound systems and shit like that. So I think New Zealand's had a really cool scene of it's really small in the sense that, you know, you can't fit that many people into the same thing. You know, there aren't 100 festivals a year that are really, you know, like here or anything like that. There are only a few big cities you can play if you're going to try and do big shows. But, I mean, I love New Zealand music. It's got its own flavor. It's kind of, it's got a dub thing to it, I guess, is kind of hip hop is awesome there. And yeah, it's cool.
That makes sense. That makes total sense. So is that what prompted the move to Melbourne, that it's, you know, you're restricted in that it's, you know, it's an island and there are only so many places and venues you can play? Is that what prompted the hop over to the mainland?
At the time, I mean, I guess, it was kind of like I wanted bigger cities, and I'd sort of tried out all the cities in New Zealand, and it was mainly a factor of a size thing. Yeah, it was just wanted that extra, I had no idea whether it was going to work or not, but just have that extra amount of space and people and things to kind of play to or experience or whatever. I had no idea in my father's dreams that I'd be traveling the world doing what I do, though. You know, I was expecting to go there and DJ in some places or whatever. So it's pretty retarded that I'm here now talking to you.
I guess we should back up a little and figure out, how'd you make the jump from drumming in these, you know, grungy bands playing Pixies covers to getting behind the decks, to producing your own music? What was that transition like?
When I was playing in bands, I was also DJing. I started DJing when I was like 14.
So it was concurrent. Okay.
Yeah, that's nearly 15 years ago, you know. Just because of being around that thing, you know, it was, my parents had these festivals on their land, and it was super early, the electronic music and bands and everything, hippies, punks, whatever, you know, it was this whole kind of culture that I was almost immersed in that I didn't really know it was a thing, you know, until way later, until I get asked about it, and then I think about it, I'm like, fuck, that was amazing. So, yeah, I mean, I always just played at parties and, you know, friends' places, and just literally just liked collecting music. It was more just a passion for music, I guess. And still playing bands, and then started figuring out how to use, you know, computer programs. And first, you know, music I was making was using the little, not even a music production software, just like those little sound clip programs. I can't even remember what they were. Just getting 10 of them, starting them at all different times, and just like trying to figure out how to fucking make. I was like, I didn't want to be around six people to have to make a song, so I tried other ways. And then I was like, and then one of my parents' friends gave me Reason, and yeah, I kind of just started doing that. Wasn't till like I actually was fully in Australia that I really started properly trying to write music. You know, it's never been a thing of like, I'm going to be this dude who makes music, or I'm going to be this DJ or whatever. It was always something I just loved to do. And suddenly it became more and more people wanted me to play, and yeah. I guess just enjoying music was the thing that was the transition, you know.
Was certainly
the collection and just watching people react to it. It was fun.
And I imagine, you know, we see you drumming on stage now. That was always sort of part of what you were doing, or was that later on when you were producing your own tracks that you thought, oh, I can sort of hybridize these. I could still play live in a sense and use this drum pad and interact with my pre-recorded materials.
Yeah, like, I mean, when I play live, I'll load in a bunch of sounds from all my tracks. You know, it's all my music that I play, and so I can kind of push and pull and give that, you know, new vibe to a song really easily. And knowing, for me, I never found programming drums and playing drums a challenge so much.
Mm-hmm.
I found it really easy to keep rhythm and all that. So for that side of things, when I'm on stage, I can perform live like that and not really have any worry about, okay, I'm going to have to try and keep time here and I've got to really nail that bit. It's like I can just do that, and I can almost play keys at the same time on my other hand, you know, trying to kind of do the things. So drums for me is just like a lock-in. If I go and stand on stage and I just, you know, I don't know what the fuck's going on, or, you know, the vibe's not right or whatever, I can just lock into the drums and know that I can take it somewhere with that, you know.
Sure.
Which is kind of like a, yeah, it's a fail-safe thing for me. I love it. I mean, drums are like the power of a lot of music for me. A good fat rhythm, you know, and a good bass line is all it needs.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The rest of it's just weird shit.
A remix of Shapeshifter's Monarch out today, followed by a little Sun Monks.
I wonder, what do you think is the reason that Australia has such a vibrant glitch hop scene, such a vibrant mid-tempo scene? There's you, there's Callia Scintilla, there's Blunt Instrument, there's Mr. Bill. Is it just that the rhythms of mid-tempo and glitch make more sense in the Australian vibe and climate, or is there something else going on in that, you know, just this vibrant scene has produced such incredible glitch hop artists?
I'm not sure. I mean, I guess there's a part to do. I mean, for when I was coming up, I was playing, the only festivals I sort of were playing were kind of like psytrance techno festivals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there wasn't really a, I mean, there still isn't there, I guess, festivals that just have the sort of music that we do or anything like that. And because there's a kind of a psychedelic element to glitch music, you know,
sure.
It is pretty out there sometimes, you know, in a really awesome way. I'm not exactly sure how and why the scene is so awesome in that sense. It just seems to be like people, I mean, there's zero fears, I guess, of the risks to be taken, you know, and to try and make something new and do something different, because people are pretty open to accepting something. And in a way, sometimes it can fall down in the sense that they are, there's a little bit of tall poppy syndrome sometimes goes down in terms of you know, some crowds and stuff, when if you do something too mainstream, they kind of just move away from you, I guess, as well. which is sort of different from here, where if you do that and you nail it, people really sort of just big you up more and more. That thing can sometimes, I think, lead to trying to do more random shit, you know, which often, I mean, when I was doing it, I didn't even know anyone. You know, I knew Spoonbill and a couple of others there that were doing something, and Tipper. It was basically all I knew of music that was sort of mid-tempo and didn't have the, you know, fast beat, or, you know, it was kind of just, I didn't even know anything about it, and I started writing a few tracks, played a couple of random club gigs, and people were like, oh, you should check this out and this out, and then this whole world over here sort of opened up to me, and it was pretty crazy. Like, I mean, I really don't even know why it works there. It just seems to be people like the difference.
So you were accepted by those psytrance scenes. I know the festivals are still big in Australia that carry mostly psytrance acts, but you were accepted by that scene. Usually, you know, a tried and true genre, especially in the States, is gonna thumb its nose at anything new that comes along.
I mean, it's funny because I think, well, I've got this weird thing in the back of my head that I feel with a lot of music. It should just be music, and you shouldn't have to know a full entire history or culturally background thing to have to understand the type of music. You know, and there's some music out there that, especially in electronic scenes, that you need to know who this person is or why they're doing this or this sort of thing to understand it or even accept it. You know, I think music should be a thing where if you hear it and if you enjoy it or you have a reaction or an emotion to it, that's what it is, as opposed to needing to know a historical background. It should be about the music more than the other thing for me. So, I mean, the psytrance thing, people there, they like to dance and just have a continuous flow of music going to them. And I guess at that time my music was very simple and straightforward and just had a funky beat, so they had no worries about letting it in. I was stoked that it even worked, you know. It was so funny, man. Sometimes we'd be playing and it was like psytrance to, or not even psytrance, more like progressive house and shit during the day. At the end, or me, you know, going into a night or something, or Spoonbill, or, you know, just we were kind of the only two really doing that shit around there of our own stuff. And yeah, it was actually a lot of fun because it, you know, for the people, like I just went to Israel this year, played the opening of one of the other stages, one of the only acts not playing psytrance or anything very 4/4 based, and people lost their shit because it was just so different for them. You know, they really had, you know, could dance differently, and I think that's kind of why, you know, it's not too offensive and it's musical.
Did they relegate you to the chill out stages, or are now alt stages popping up at these psytrance festivals?
No, I definitely don't play on chill out stages. No way. No, I play either main stages or the second stage. Often a lot of these parties for me, the second stage, and a lot of parties around the world, a main stage always has this kind of weird, I love it because, you know, often it's got the biggest sound system, biggest production. But if it's a party that's just fucking huge, sometimes the second biggest stage, or, you know, not the main stage, can be the one where the vibe is just the best, because it's like,
right,
you know, it's not this whole stigma behind, okay, we're going to go to the main stage and watch all these big acts and whatever. It's like, let's just fucking enjoy it, you know, and you end up playing these stages where people just lose their shit because it's there to have a good time, you know. So I'm playing a lot of, all over the place. I mean, sometimes I just closed the stage, well, that was actually almost a year ago now, in Mexico. The whole party was 4/4 music too. And played last on the main stage as the sun went down on the coast of Caribbean, and people just, you know, at first were like, what are we doing, how are we dancing this shit, and then by the end of it was completely fucking in love with it, you know. And so then the party continued later on the night because everyone was raging so hard.
That's cool, because this is what you've been doing all your life, essentially. You've been sort of playing the weirdo music and trying to win over this crowd. I guess that's a huge skill to have, especially if, you know, you're going on the road with a big gigantic, somebody who has a different sound than you, and you've got to show these people, hey, this is my sound, this is what's up, let's go.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a funny thing that, you know, like it can play on your mind a little bit, in the sense that it would be so much easier for me to go to Beatport or wherever and hit up all the people and get the new songs that are going off and going down. And, the element of DJing in that sense is easier, because you can just play the song and it connects with the people that they know it from, however, whether it's a mainstream thing or not. But to get up there and play all your own music, and maybe only one or two things that isn't yours, to then, you know, capture a crowd that wouldn't normally listen to you or hasn't heard of you is a massive challenge. And I mean, it's something that you, I don't know, yeah, it's scary sometimes. And then when you get up there, you just got to do it and you got to believe in yourself and, yeah, blast through it. I mean, people are starting to now realize that there are people out there who play just their own music and they are responding to that, which I think is really important because it's a skill and a risk. And yeah, I really enjoy hearing people's music, you know.
Obviously, it's paying off for you.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, I don't even know what's going on right now. You know, like I'm just doing my thing. I'm here now, and I'll be there next, and I'm over there next. You know, and I'm sort of have these goals that I want to do for myself, but they're not too massively long term because then, you know, they can fall over and not be something, and I don't want to be disappointed at any point by what I do. I do what I love, and there's challenges and everything. But yeah, like I think I'm just going to keep doing what I do. And it's actually funny because the more I go into just thinking I want to make this and this feels good to me, the more it works. And the more I think, oh, is this working? Oh, I should go more this angle, the less it works. So, yeah, follow your heart, that kind of vibe, I guess.
That's a lesson for all you young producers out there.
That's right.
Tell me quickly about Sun Monks. It's your project with Austero, and it's different than the OPO sound. It's something completely new. Give me the quick and dirty, maybe for people who aren't familiar with this new brand of music from you.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the Sun Monks thing was it's been around as long, not as long as OPO, because I was doing that when I was really young, but production wise, pretty much the same amount of time in terms of playing shows as what OPO is now and what Sun Monks is for the last 5 years. But it's sort of the thing where it gives me the option to sit back, hang with a homie and make music that's just doesn't have to be for any sense of a dance floor environment. You know, it's like just feel good music or chill music or whatever. And I don't listen to very banging music when I'm chilling out, you know? So it's kind of like a passion of mine is I just love listening to good music, whatever style it is. It doesn't matter to me at all, you know? So to get that kind of musical side of it out is a lot of fun. It's very emotive kind of dub. I think both being from, you know, New Zealand and Mexico, we have that kind of roots almost dub thing going on where Austero grew up too. He's grown up with a lot of the reggae culture as well, so kind of that's what we brought to it, you know. It's got a very dub feel to it, but maintaining an electronic high class production adventure.
Do you have any surprises in store, things you've been working on while you've been on the bus with Big Gigantic you get to break out?
I got a lot of music that I mean, more than half my set's unreleased at the moment, way more, due to writing an album. I've just done a bunch of remixes for people, and there's a shitload of music that people have never have heard, as well as, you know, I've got to play the ones that I love to play and people love to hear. But yeah, it's been fun kind of embarking back on the album trip. Because it is a trip, and it's a head fuck, and it's a emotional ride. But yeah, I'm definitely gonna have my album done hopefully by the early next year.
Okay, we'll be looking for that.
Yeah, you heard it first, man.
That's what we like. We love the exclusives. Oscar, Davey Wright, this was a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the Yonz podcast.
Of course, man. Absolute pleasure to talk to you. You're a legend.
Don't Hold Back, a classic OPO track taking us out today. I'd like to thank everyone at Team OPO, Andrew Flad, Dave Neiman, and Muzz Muller. For a special thanks, we go to Oscar. He's going to be touring New Zealand all December and hits Rainbow Serpent in January. He's also planning to release a brand new studio album early next year. Checking in on our contest page, we're giving away a ton of tickets to Decadence New Year's Eve Blowout in Denver, Resolution in Seattle, STS9's entire New Year's run in Atlanta, and our fourth anniversary party in San Francisco with Wicket, Alicia, Singularity, Mutrix, and more. It takes under a minute to sign up for free at theyonz.com, and you can enter all of our contests with the click of a button. Please visit theyonz.com for news, artist profiles, tour dates, and tickets to some of the biggest shows across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the Unz podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode,
contact me at anand@theunst.com. That's A-N-A-N-D at theunst.com. Join the conversation at The Unst Podcast on Twitter.